Hi, welcome to another Beerfest Brewer Profile we're going to do today with Adrian Rodriguez Montfort from, and I'm going to butcher this, so I apologize in advance, but Cervetheria Paracaidista?
Paracaidista, yeah. Close enough. Very good.
I tried hard beforehand, but just Spanish, as you'll see, is not my native language, so I'm not very good at it. But anyway, you're joining us all the way from Mexico City.
That's correct, Brian. Thank you very much for having me today.
Great to have you. I think you're the first person I've had from Mexico City. I've had one other brewer from near there, but this is the first one from actually in the city. So maybe start with, what's your background? How did you get into running or owning a brewery in Mexico?
Right. So thank you very much. So ever since I started, obviously, of legal drinking age, because obviously I didn't start underage. None of us did. But ever since, you know, growing up in Mexico, Mexico is obviously a very beer heavy culture. You know, we have a fantastic number of historical breweries, many of which are known around the world. So, you know, it's beer is ever present in Mexican culture. But for a large group of us, and certainly those of us who started in the beer industry a while back, there was always something missing. And, you know, we always wanted to try something more, something different. And back around that time, obviously, this was long before craft beer became popular in Mexico. We had to do with sort of imported beer. And I still remember that the two first non-Mexican sort of interesting beers I'd ever had was obviously one was Guinness. And the other one was Löwenbräu from Germany. And from then on, it just spiraled. You know, I realized that there was a far richer beer world than the traditional lagers that were available on the market. And, you know, years later, I was fortunate enough to have several jobs that allowed me to travel the world. And obviously, every place that I went to, I tried as many and as much different beers as possible. And that's ultimately how, after a long-winded career of traveling and spending my per diems in pubs and beer stores, I ultimately decided to go into the beer industry here in Mexico at a time where craft beer was finally making sort of its boom here in the country.
Right. Yeah, that's interesting you're talking about Guinness being one of your first ones, because I remember when Corona introduced. I'm old enough to remember when Corona came into Ireland, and it was a big exotic drink then. It was the whole fact of putting the bit of lime in the bottle, and that it was just
right,
completely, and that was considered exotic. Obviously, you know, the people's opinions of the beer since, as craft beer has grown,
but at that time it was different and interesting, and, you know, inadvertently we swapped. So, you know, you tried Corona and then I tried Guinness, so it all went full circle.
And like that, so was all the beer in Mexico up to recently, was it really kind of lagers like Corona or something like that? Or is that still the main beer that most people drink?
I mean, you know, they're one of the world's largest, you know, brewing corporations, any way you slice it. They're ever present in the market. And, you know, to be fairly honest, at least certain brewers of a certain age, you know, that we started drinking those beers when we started drinking, we still have a fondness for them. And I, you know, I am not one of those who sort of aggressively goes out and says, ah, this beer is this piss and, you know, don't drink that. You know, there's a time and place for everything. And, you know, I'll at the brewery, we'll still every now and then enjoy a couple of, you know, light Mexican lagers when we're brewing, especially if it's a hot day. But they are still very present in the market. They're sort of massive industrial conglomerates. And us as an industry, we're still relatively small. I think we're at the 1% mark. But we're still battling against two massive.
Sorry, you broke up there a little bit. It got a little bit sketchy. I think you're back again. I think it just broke up there for
definitely
a second. So, I mean, I think that's like a lot of people. I mean, yeah, people can get very snobby about the mass-produced lagers, but some of them are, you know, they are what they are, and they're like, you know, they do try to appeal to the widest people, so they do a pretty good job of that. I mean, you can't put it down.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that you. I mean, give us a history of the brewery. So, I mean, what kind of beers you brewing? Where did it? How did it get started up? And then, where are you now?
Right. So, you know, as I said, I was very fortunate enough to travel the world and, you know, visit. I spent a lot of time in the UK, in the US. So obviously, you know, two very large traditional and innovative beer markets at that time. And right around, probably say about 10 years ago, that project was sort of grinding down and I was looking to sort of what will my next move be in my career. And then I realized that because I had spent so much time traveling and living abroad, I had been able to save a bit of money. And I was really sort of bummed and ashamed that some of these great beers that I had tried, many of them very small local breweries in the UK and the US, there was no way they were not available in the Mexican market. So I actually got into beer first by importing beer into Mexico from the UK and the US. We worked with a number of small independent breweries, and that worked out well for, you know, good fair 3-4 years. And that, but ultimately there was that idea of we should start doing something of our own. And we took the decision to sort of sell the importing side of the business and start the brewery around a time where, as I said, the craft beer industry in Mexico was starting to boom. But it was booming with a very unfortunate lack of diversity and variety. Most of the breweries brewed 3 styles of beer. Everybody had a pale ale, everybody had an IPA and a stout. And that was kind of the limit to creativity. So we actually started our project, Paracaidista, which I'll go into the name in a second, to brew styles a bit unknown in the Mexican market. Actually, our first beer that we brewed was a hoppy Belgian style Saison, which was kind of the first mass-produced or, you know, craft-produced Saisons in the country. And ever since, we've always stuck to brewing uniquely, a bit more technically challenging, a bit more creative beer styles, whether they're revisiting very, very classic, traditional, sort of forgotten European beer styles, or really innovative, sort of cutting-edge brewing techniques and ingredients. And the name Paracaidista is actually a Mexican slang that means squatter. Because when we started, our idea was that we would actually be a gypsy brewery, very similar to the likes of Michler and Evil Twin and some of the other grand European gypsy breweries. Hence the name Paracaidista, which is kind of a squatter, an errand, somebody that doesn't have a fixed abode, but kind of travels all over the place. But very shortly, we realized that around that time, there was not enough installed capacity in Mexican breweries for us to be able to sustainably grow breweries. So, in Mexico City, but then.
Yeah, we're still having a little bit of technical issues every now and then, but I think we're okay again. So you can't live up to your name. You were forced into actually building a brewery.
So we needed to have a space of our own that we could, especially with the type of beers that we wanted to brew. We brew a lot of sour beer. We do a lot of traditional Belgian bread, PDO, lacto, barrel aging. And obviously, a lot of breweries would be very uncomfortable with having this sort of bread or barrels around their clean beer. So we had to have a space of our own. But philosophically, we kept the name because it reflects the way that we brew beer. Beer is not meant to be static. Beer is not meant to be sort of firmly fixed in place. It's an errand, travel, and journey to explore ingredients and sort of processes and ideas and trends. And, you know, we've gone through a number of waves. We don't define ourselves as a fixed style brewery, but, you know, we've done, again, as I said, from very traditional forgotten European beer styles to double dry hop hazy IPAs. So philosophically, we've kept the name because it reflects our moving nature, how we don't want to be stuck in one single place.
Right. And I mean, it sounds like what you're saying is that, I mean, it sounds like you took a very, or is it a very risky path? Like if you're trying to do beers that are, like you said, they're just taking a step back. I mean, you know, craft beer is a niche in its first place. And it sounds like saisons and sours that are very much a niche of a niche. I mean, is that a risk, or is it something that you can then own the whole, or do you own that whole area now in Mexico or Mexico City at least?
I don't think we own that part of the market. We wouldn't want to own that part of the market. As you know, people have always asked me, we recently just this year celebrated as a brewery our 7th anniversary. Our tap room is actually, we only just opened our tap room. It's celebrating its 1 year anniversary next week. And people always, a lot of people always ask me, it's like, where do you want to go? How big do you want to get? And I've always told them, we don't want to be Mexico's largest craft brewery. We want to be Mexico's smartest, most interesting, most challenging brewery. So yes, it's difficult. We've had certain beer styles that I think are phenomenal and interesting, and just they weren't ready for the market at that time. And we've done certain other, again, you know, we've dabbled in the hops and the haze and all that stuff, and it's sold like, you know, like warm bread. So it's, again, we tend to view beer as an ongoing conversation that evolves. And as the market in Mexico keeps on getting bigger and more, I want to say smarter, breweries will pop out that deal with their own specific niches. So we have amazing breweries, which are a good friend of ours, that will only do hazy IPAs. And they're fantastic at it, and they're doing great. And there's other breweries that will only brew lagers, like very basic drinking lagers. And that's great for them. And I think the Mexican market is getting to that stage where it's mature enough that the niche is big enough that breweries can now focus on a very particular profile that they want to explore and be good for them.
Right. And I guess, like, now that you have your own tap room, I'm going to guess that is kind of, does that help? You know, does that change or allow you to be more adventurous because people are coming in and you can talk to them rather than relying on
them? Absolutely. Absolutely. And that was always the idea behind the tap room, allowing us to do more frequent, smaller batches of different types of beers and really serve as a testing ground and see if, you know, the direction that we're thinking of and the sort of mood that we're in at that particular point in time is something that works with the market or not. Or on the other sort of more basic sense, it's just a great place to, you know, go sit down, have a beer, talk about beer, be surrounded by beer nerds. So yeah, that was definitely the idea behind having our own tap room.
All right. And do you think, like, do most breweries have tap rooms? Like, or is there a big craft beer scene, like craft bar scene, that would have a mix of different craft breweries?
It's definitely getting there. I think the biggest challenge that a lot of the breweries face, and you know, it's certainly our case. So we live, you know, we're based in Mexico City, which, as you can imagine, like any major international large city, real estate and retail prices are ridiculously expensive. So, you know, it forces many sort of smaller breweries to have to rethink having their own venue. But outside of the country where sort of real estate is a bit more accessible, if you go up to Baja, which, you know, borders California, almost every brewery in Baja has its own tap room, much like the same model as in California. I think, you know, people do tend to forget that Mexico is a massively large country with very different profiles and everything, sort of culturally, gastronomically, and beer is certainly not the exception. we have the fortunate slash unfortunate reality of being the only two, one of the only two countries in the world that has a border with the United States. So that beer culture, which is massive, has permeated in a way. You go to Baja and it almost feels like California, but go down to Mexico City and it's completely different. Go down to the coasts and you'll see a completely different style of brewing. And I think that's what has allowed us as a Mexican craft beer industry to really explore and be unique and not just copying and pasting the same model.
Yeah, I mean, just mentioning the size. I mean, what is it? Mexico City is what, 10 million or something? Insane.
22 last count.
Jesus, because that's like, you know, I'm Irish. I mean, that's four times the population of the whole country over here, just in the city. So kind of getting my head around just, how different it must be, like, you know, just within the city. It must be insane. So, but yeah, I mean, it does open up then, obviously, like you said, a niche can be quite big. You know, it's not necessarily like a niche in Ireland. It might be 100,000 people there. It could be 2 or 3 million, which could kind of keep you going for a while. So, yeah, I mean, it's getting more adventurous and getting more exciting there from what you're saying, like more traditional. Is there any sort of, is there a drive to, or again, I guess it's, you can't really sum it up because it's such a big country, but like, is there a drive in some areas to be kind of using more native ingredients and trying to make more kind of a Mexican beer rather than say copying?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we're sort of involved in a very heavy historical battle with the United States over the last couple of years, where they've become very sort of Mexican lagers, whatever that means, have become tremendously popular in the United States and in some other beer markets around the world. And then you see the likes of Brazil, which was able to get the Catarina Sour style registered as a uniquely Brazilian beer style. Or you have sort of New Zealand, beers, which have their own distinctive sort of personality. And we as an industry have been working very hard to, first of all, define what a Mexican lager is, because if you ask one brewery, it's one style. If you ask another brewery, it's different. The traditional Vienna style lager was almost lost anywhere in the world except for Mexico. So we've been kind of having a discussion of, do we claim sort of the Mexican version of Vienna, which is a bit more of a lighter, less maltier, more easy drinking style? Do we rename that? Do we define Mexican lager as the Corona style beer? But there is definitely a move towards identifying and representing what Mexico is in terms of our brewing industry. We're fortunate to live, again, in a massively diverse country, which has anything, ingredients, fruits, spices, even bugs. So we've brewed a goza, a traditional goza, but instead of using salt, we use agave worm salt, which is derived from the agave worms that grow in the agaves that give out mezcal and tequila. Those are dried out and powdered, and it's a salt basically made out of worm. And people who come from other parts of the world, they can't believe that we've done that. But we've been eating worm salt for the last 1,000 years. So it's very common for us. So there is really that move to say, how do we find that balance between taking what's best of, let's call it the US beer influence that we can't fight, we can't deny it. It's there. It's part of our beer. But how do we take that and give it a uniquely Mexican twist in terms of ingredients, in terms of processes, in terms of yeast and native yeast? And that's kind of where us and some of the other breweries out in the market have focused our efforts over the last couple of years.
Right. And do you think there's a market for that as an export, or would it be primarily that you'd be starting with, you know, with Mexicans? Like, would there be... Because in some places, you know yourself, it's kind of like what's local and native can almost be looked down upon. Mm-hmm. Whereas only when the foreigners take it up, then you kind of it suddenly becomes they see the value in it, you know?
I think that if people sort of, let's call it the beer snobs and or the beer adventurers, the beer explorers, tried some of the stuff that is happening here in Mexico, they would be amazed that the creativity, the level of technical expertise in some of these beers that are world class, sort of recognized at the World Beer Cup and sort of the large beer competitions. I think the main challenge that we have is that in terms of production, relatively small. Producing up with our own tap room, let alone say exporting somewhere else in the world. So for the time being, I think the best way to try what Mexico has to offer is to get down on a plane and come down and visit us.
Okay, well, I have to do that sometime. But again, you have the US on your border, so I'm sure you can, you know, there's enough people coming down there that if they, you know, if they pick it up, then again, it'll spread around the world. So, you know, that the interest will kind of.
Absolutely. And we have seen that happen over the last number of years. Again, I do have to say that there's a very lovely friendship overall between the Mexican beer, independent beer industry and the US independent beer industry. Much apart rivalries that exist anywhere else, we work very close. We collaborate often as we can. We share. They share best practices because obviously they're far more advanced in certain areas. We don't grow hops, but we grow great mangoes. So there's a bit of a swap. I would say that the Mexican independent beer industry has grown at the speed that it has compared to some of the other countries, is because we have benefited from that close collaboration with partners and friends and colleagues in the US.
Okay. Well, that brings me then to like, what are the challenges down there? I mean, it sounds, you know, sounds like a big market, lots of different ingredients, lots of people willing to try new things. So, kind of, what are the challenges in getting your brewery set up? Or are they challenges around bureaucracy? Or are the challenges in, I don't know, getting hold of certain ingredients? What are the challenges like for
I
you?
think
And I guess then, what are the challenges for the industry as a whole, maybe?
I think that the biggest challenge as an industry is an unfortunate the way alcohol duties and taxation work in the country. It's a system that was basically shaped and designed by the two large macro industrial breweries. Sort of volume, it's basically by production value. So obviously the microbreweries, you know, it costs cents on a dollar to produce 1 liter of beer, and they pay taxes on cents. Whereas by comparison, we because we source different ingredients and we do a much more in sort of craftier process, our costs are higher, so our taxes tend to be in proportionate higher than one the macro breweries pay. And that's a challenge for a lot of breweries trying to be more competitive in terms of price because you can't fight the way that the tax system is set up. And there has been a lot of lobbying over the last couple of years. We actually had to sue the two largest sort of, I don't know if I can say names, but two large macro beer conglomerates in federal competition court. That suit was won, and we were allowed sort of to compete openly in the market. Obviously, they like giving tax cuts. They like getting more revenue out of companies. So that is something that, as an industry, we are fighting, and we are going to keep fighting as a group. I think independently, there's still a lot of discussion to be had around consistency and quality. We have a lot of very eager, very young crowd that have grown up in Mexico with craft beer that, you know, will brew two, three batches in their backyard think they're really good and then decide to open a brewery. And there's still quite a lot of lacking an understanding of the industry and the quality process and how to make sure you're consistent in making good beer and making sure that only good beer gets into the market. So that's up to us, to the breweries that have been around for longer, to mentor and coach some of these smaller startup projects to make sure that they focus on quality. Because ultimately, you know, one bad beer can ruin the entire experience for one and can ruin the entire industry for everyone. So I think those are the two challenges that we can address.
Right. It sounds, I don't know, I have to get down to Mexico sometime. I must admit it's a place I have never been. So it sounds like I'm going to have to go there. And I've been close. I've been kind of south of you and I've been north of you, but I haven't quite got into Mexico yet. So so it sounds like I'll have to pay it a visit at some time fairly soon. Apart from yourselves, are there any other breweries that you particularly recommend that you search out for anybody going down there, or any, you know, that makes something maybe different that you can only get in Mexico?
Absolutely. So, I mean, again, Mexico is a massive country, but there are a few standout breweries that I consider to be world-class, each in their own particular style of doing things. But there's Hercules in Querétaro, which is sort of central Mexico. They're one of the largest independent breweries. Massive of styles and amazing sour program. If you go north toward the northeast in Monterrey, there's Meta Brews and there's Fausto, which are sort of reliving traditional European styles and doing it amazingly. If you go to Baja, you know, again, just south of in Tijuana and Ensenada, just south of San Diego, you'll have world-class IPAs, which can compete and do compete with the best of what California has to offer. So I think there's, you know, again, because of the small amount of volume that we produce, some of these beers might not be as well known outside of our borders, but if somebody does manage to, or at least the consistent feedback that we get from folks that show up, foreigners and expats and tourists that show up to our tap room and say, I have no idea that Mexico was making these styles of beers, and they're amazing. So I think it's a journey of exploration. If somebody's looking for kind of a virgin, untamed beer jungle to explore, then definitely Mexico's a place.
Okay, well, maybe it's something, like you said, somebody can start looking at importing to over here or something. So if people are coming to look for you, and hopefully they will be after this, I guess your tap room is the best place to look for your beers. Where exactly is it in Mexico City?
Absolutely. So our tap room is located in Juarez, which is one of what you would call the hipster neighborhoods of Mexico City. We're on Liverpool Street, number 45 in Juarez. The tap room is exactly as the brewery, Cervecería Paracaidista. And fortunately, we live in a neighborhood which you can find a very large number of breweries and tap rooms within walking distance. So it's very close to the central business district. You can't miss it.
So you can come down and spend the day, maybe pay you a visit and someone else, and then back to you again.
Absolutely. And we're always happy to point people in the ways of other tap rooms and other breweries.
And sorry, just on the tap room, is it beer? Is there food? Is there music? What normally happens around the tap room in Mexico?
We have, most of them are very, very small batch, frequently rotating taps. We do try and keep a balance between some of our barrel aged sour stuff with some more easy drinking stuff because of particularities of Mexican beer licenses. We do have food. We obviously have tacos, which pair fantastically with our beer. And we also feature a very select options on mezcal, if anybody is feeling a bit more adventurous after a couple of pints.
Okay. Well, listen, Adrian, That's been fascinating. I really do have to get there at some stage. Is there anything I should have asked you that you'll kill me or you'll be giving out if we didn't cover?
No, I again, get me started talking on beer and I could go on for hours, but I think we've been able to I've been very thankful to speak on behalf of an industry of and colleagues, which again all very tight-knit group. So being able to talk a little bit of what we've done as a collective is a huge honor for me. And again, the invitation is open to any of our breweries and any of our tap rooms. We love to talk about what we do. We love to do it this way. We would prefer to do it face to face over a couple of pints.
Okay, well, hopefully, I'm pretty sure there'll be some brewers anyway heading that way. Hopefully, they'll look you up and maybe you'll swap some ideas and things, and then maybe some customers as well to pay a trip to you. Sorry, I'm losing my tongue here. Okay, well, listen, thanks a million for taking the time. It's always great to find out what's happening somewhere else, especially a city alone that has 20 million people in it. Like I said, it's four times the size of Ireland just in that city, so I can only imagine the variety of beers available. So what I'll do is I'll just play out a video here, and I'll say thank you, and hopefully we'll get a few people, if you're watching this, to kind of go and pay you a visit and maybe do some collaborations or pick your brains on some beers.
Absolutely. Thank you very much for having me, Brian. Thanks everybody for watching, and hopefully we'll see you face to face really soon.
Okay, I'm just going to play this out. Thanks.